If you're listening to this podcast, chances are you have the mindset of an entrepreneur, even if you haven't yet started a business. The problem with being an entrepreneur is that you have to wear so many hats. It's not just about creating great products or services. Finding the right tool that not only helps you out but simplifies everything can be a real game changer. For millions of businesses, that tool is Shopify. With hundreds of ready-to-use templates, Shopify can help you build a beautiful online store to match your brand's unique style. Shopify can also accelerate your content creation. They're packed with helpful AI tools that write product descriptions, page headlines, and even enhance your product photography. Turn your big business idea into with Shopify on your side. Sign up for your $1 per month trial and start selling today at shopify.com/inspirational. Go to shopify.com/inspirational. shopify.com/inspirational. Welcome to Our Sunday Talks, an exclusive series for the patrons of the Inspirational Living Podcast. Today's talk was edited and adapted from All's Right with the World by Charles B. Newcomb, published in 1897. Every act of our lives is an act of faith, based upon experience. We take food and drink into our mouths without thought of the process of nutrition, or understanding how waste tissue is restored. We take air into our lungs, though ignorant of the chemistry by which it will oxygenate the blood. We fall forward as we walk, depending on our unconscious will and muscle to maintain our center of gravity. We direct our steps to a distant point without anxiety, lest our brain should become confused and fail to lead us back. As the jingle rhyme so quaintly puts it, "My feet, they take me through the house. They hoist me up the stairs. I only have to steer them, and they take me everywhere." We fall asleep without concern, surrendering all consciousness and confident of a fresh awakening in the morning. We need not fear to trust too much to God when we are sure it is God we trust. Our only limitation is, like Peter's walking on the waves of Galilee, in our want of knowledge, which is the basis of all true faith. When we cut a finger, we know that nature begins at once her work of healing, and the coagulated blood protects the newly forming tissue. The infallible law of attraction draws from the universal life every element required to restore the flesh to soundness. Why can we not as easily accept the truth that this same law governs our environment and will just as surely bring us everything we need? In the case of the flesh wound, we know that our anxious thoughts can inflame the injured part and retard the cure. This too is true of our material conditions. Our worries never fail to hinder our prosperity, though we do not yet understand the law that operates to retard or hasten. We are just beginning to recognize as a scientific fact that all action is in the mind. So far, we have dealt mainly with the external expressions rather than with the true causes. The science of thought has not been included in our studies. All our life as yet is miracle, All its processes are complex and inexplicable. Who can pretend that it is otherwise? Our universal discontent is an admission that as individuals we have failed to understand and control life's conditions. Where then is the intelligence that has controlled it? Are we ready to assert that life is governed by accident and is chaotic? Cannot we extend the faith of which we have such constant illustration in our relation to the body to include the circumstances of our life as well? If we do the thing that lies at hand, we cannot fail to find our place in the system of humanity. We will fulfill our destiny at every point. Life is an intelligent design. We may not yet see the right side of the pattern that is being woven. The looms seem often cruel. But as Emerson says, we lie in the lap of an immense intelligence, which makes us organs of its activity and receivers of its truth. Receptiveness must come before illumination. Activity will surely follow. We need only open our eyes to perceive the universal opulence. Confidence is better than courage. Knowledge leaves no place for hope or fear. Growth is realization. How can we talk of the need of courage in life if we have confidence in the sovereignty of an absolute good that is perfectly related to our individual requirements? Courage presupposes fear. Both courage and fear lose their meaning when we have come to the true understanding of life. We simply know and are at peace. Our boat may be full of water, but we are sure it cannot sink, and we can even sleep on the tossing waves, like Jesus of Galilee. Let us remember that unselfishness is freedom. It is a state of mind that looks abroad. It does not need, however, to seek for itself the gratification of public activities. The reputation of unselfishness often suggests a subtle phase of a selfish nature. Many feed upon the contemplation of their own acts and require the approval of their friends and neighbors. We must candidly admit that our present point of evolution, selfishness predominates over love. Humanity as yet is but a shrub, not a full-grown tree. It is in the process of a development which never really ceases. Even in its dark ages mark a period of growth in history, as well as in the individual. Evolution vibrates with a double movement like that of the tides. We should not be distressed at the ebb or elated at the flood. There is no retrogression in reality. The appearance is a phase of progress. Nature moves in an orderly way. Standing at any point upon the surface of the globe, we cannot see far in any direction. We cannot judge or measure by the eye the entire circle of 25,000 miles. This is equally true of individual lives. We cannot look forward or backward for any appreciable distance. We cannot measure the arc line of our infinite past, nor that of the infinite future. The one little standing point we occupy today is not sufficient in its altitude to enable us to solve our problems in the spiritual trigonometry, the higher mathematics of our being. One mortal incarnation is but an infinitesimal point in the great circle of existence. A truly divine revelation is that which brings to us through experience a knowledge of ourselves and thus a knowledge of the universal life. Few mortals could endure a distinct view of their past or future. Nature drops the veil until such time as we are strong enough to raise it. As parents conceal from a child the suffering of its past, which might sadden its young heart, and the anxieties possible to its future. Let us attend the dinner of today. We do not need to remember in detail yesterday's bill of fare, and it is too early to prepare the menu for tomorrow. In this present moment, we unite free will and destiny. We are experiencing results of which the causes lie in our past thinking, and in the living of today, we arrange the consequences of tomorrow. We very soon learn to choose our food with a view to results upon the system. The palate has a use of its own, but we do not allow it to govern exclusively our choice of diet. So it is with the pleasure of existence. If we are wise, we do not make them our chief aim. They come as incidentals of true living. When we are half blind, we cannot judge accurately of perspective and proportion. In the early stages of growth, we consider chiefly what we are to get, and imagine getting to be the true object of life. We are at the negative pole of our being, and are easily drawn into the stronger magnetic fields of others. Later, we discover the positive pole, and learn that we obtain chiefly through giving. We begin to operate from our own centers, and being lifted up, draw others to us. A perfect understanding results in the command of both the positive and the negative, the discovery of the right relation between giving and receiving, the equable flow of the universal currents through our individual lives. True living involves neither accumulation nor impoverishment. Egoism and altruism are equally wrong and hurtful by themselves. Neither is a principle of being. In the first, the thought is magnetized by the personality of self, in the latter by personality of others. The true balance lies where the thought is neither inverted nor scattered. Egoism and altruism are really one. When the soul has learned that its own highest good is fulfilled only in the service of others, then it knows that it has no separateness from other people, but is a part with them of the same great unity of life. Thus we pass in the evolution of ethics from the tribal and clannish ideas of a pastoral race to walled towns and patriarchal governments. At the next step of progress, the walls are thrown down, the moats filled and changed to gardens, the drawbridge lowered and the gate raised. Then come the confederacy of states and the study of sociology as a science of the common good. In these current years of the present century, we have removed the fences between neighbors, throwing their grounds together in our landscape gardening. We have opened magnificent park systems to the people. This recognition of brotherhood and sisterhood is significant. As we develop, we perceive that perfect equity blends and harmonizes the love of ourselves and the love of our neighbors. The true life is neither that of the altruist nor that of the egoist, but that which includes and governs both in perfect equipoise, identifying the interests of self with the interests of all. The thought of anything as a necessity always involves a fear, lest we should fail of its possession. But to the emancipated soul there is no such word as necessity. Our resources are infinite, and consequently have no limitations. What is truly desirable is always within our reach. True education involves, most of all, the development of the receptive faculties. The first condition is the simplicity of childhood.